We are learning from Kabbalah for the Student, Matan Torah, article, page 249, item 9. You can ask questions at our website, Kabda TV. Selected questions will be aired throughout the lesson. It's Kabbalah for the Student, page 245, item 9.
Indeed, we need to examine the heart and the source of this natural law. And upon receiving charity, and who it was that fathered the flaw of shame and impatience that we feel upon receiving charity from another.
We see that inanimate, vegetative, and animate, there's a law which exists, in which each and every one receives according to his desire, as much as he calculates his ability to receive, and this law exists in an absolute manner, meaning there's the will to receive, and against it there are all kinds of abilities to fill the will to receive towards all towards this creature, which is still vegetative matter. And that's how it happens with atoms, with molecules, with the biological cells, and so on and so forth. And here, when we're talking already about this creature called a human, in psychology there's something additional. This additional thing is called shame. And in this discernment that we have there, we have difficulty. Because if we're talking about animals, it's very simple. Just like maybe pets that are a little spoiled, we kind of put them a certain through habit, a second nature. And also it's kind of like it's not the nature anymore. Whereas in the degree of animal, we see that anyone who knows the nature of animal, that it's a very simple nature according to the nature that exists in every single species. And with us also, maybe in human beings. But there's a very special component that differentiates and raises us or lowers us, you could say, in comparison with the degree of animate. And that is the shame. We blemish, we're ashamed, we're shy, we come to a state in which we blush and we shame from, in some manner, such that it's not that I'm ashamed of myself, that also could be, but that's already, but I'm ashamed that people discover my will to receive that I usually would hide. Meaning, I already start doing the calculation above my ego with others. Like if an animal thinks of how strong it is above more or less compared to some other animal, and all kinds of demonstrations, and accordingly they do the scrutiny. That's how the calculation is with shame. This is already how we operate in a society, so we have the depiction of the society within us, and that thing is the connection with others, where my ego becomes very complex already. And I need to maintain myself in a state other, meaning otherwise I don't feel myself as a human, rather as a beast. And if I don't feel this sensation, I must take into account the desires of others in order to not bring myself to the degree of shame. And this decides in us everything. If not for the shame, if I could erase the matter of shame, I would live like animals. And I wouldn't feel anything bad in life. rather, eat, drink, multiply. There's nothing else other than that. When we're always in advancement, other than with shame, I have to be more than this, less than that, like this. But I advance in a way that we need to learn throughout the history that we go through, throughout our development. When we get these blows, we get blows as the shame brings us to all kinds of states which are wrong. So we eventually need to learn how to use it in the right way. That is actually the matter. So humanity, from a lack of choice, constantly wants to erase the matter of shame. We see that to the degree in which we become more and more open. We don't need to be ashamed. Each can steal. Each can use all his might, all his forces, and the force of his arm, and the might, and the money. It doesn't matter. I stole. Nice. Meaning, shame is in addition to our ego, that if we add, then we can obscure them from a lack of choice. It's our defensive mechanism, but we pay dearly for it, because in this, with this, we feel ourselves very empty. If we nullify the shame, then the addition above the beast remains empty, and then we and by doing so, we nullify the human part in us, and then depression, and people are willing to lose themselves, and terror, and drugs, and meaning there is a problem here with the part of me which is man, which is a human, where the shame operates in it, and I don't know what to do with it. Yes, please.
So again, item 9. Indeed, we need to examine the heart and the source of this natural law, and who it was that fathered this flaw of shame and impatience that we feel upon receiving charity from another. It is understood from a law that is known to scientists that each branch bears the same nature as its root.
Imagine to yourself, if we were animals, how would we receive? And if I'm a human, how do I receive? A big difference.
And that the branch also desires, seeks, and craves, and benefits from all the conducts of the root. Conversely, all the conducts that are not in the root, its branch removes itself from them, cannot tolerate them, and is harmed by them.
That's how we're built, where if I was born from something, that nature I receive, and if already we're talking about education and all the rest, it all goes through my mother's home and my father's home, it all remains in a person, and that's how I continue. Because a person himself, when he's born, he doesn't have, it's like he's empty, despite it's not, but we discover that there's additional inherent phenomena. But in short, from where we came out and where you grew up, and that's where you get all your discernments. And this law,
This law exists between each root and its branch and cannot be breached. Now here opens before us a door to understand the source of all the pleasures and pains in the world.
This is the thing. In our world, we don't understand so much that there's a thing that is associated with its root. In spirituality, it's a must, because we all get nourishment from the light of Ein Sof, which comes down in all the degrees. And therefore, when it comes to a certain object or to some thing, it all the partsufim operate upon it. And that's why it can't be that what it receives, it will not be from its root and from its upper and its upper and so on. That's why in spirituality it stands out and it's clear. In corporeality, sometimes we don't understand that.
Now here opens before us a door to understand the source of all the pleasures and pains in our world. Since the Creator is the root of His creations, we feel all that exists in Him and extends to us directly from Him as pleasant and delightful. Because our nature is close to our root, and everything that is not in Him and does not extend to us directly from Him, but contradicts creation itself, will be against our nature and difficult for us to tolerate.
If there are no questions, we'll continue. Yes, Shapira?
How could there be something that has no root? Meaning, what he writes is that something that doesn't exist in the root suddenly exists. How could it be?
No, the root is always there, but it's a little complex. It could be that your nature is exactly like in the root, in some manner more or less similar. And it could be that your nature is opposite the root completely, or in some percentages. It could be that, and he writes there, that your father was a Nazi and you're the opposite. You came to wanting to connecting to Judaism. He writes about that in, I think, in the Chirut, in the Freedom article. Meaning that inversion, that oppositeness, shows on the connection as well. If you're going out now, let's say, as an example, to tell about your method, about your system, about your theory, what you're learning, and understand, then you can't turn to people who are indifferent to you or that are interested for or against. You can find an open ear in those who are resisting you, but resisting to the essence of it, to the point. Either people who are against the wisdom of Kabbalah or something like that, but, and there you can find an understanding. Connection. Maybe a face in the back, in the posterior, but it's still nevertheless connection. Whereas if someone is indifferent, you have no point of contact with him.
But our nation is divided, naturally divided. When we go to speak to people who are opposite, then how do we speak to them? Because I always make these attempts and I see there's no one to talk to. Because they are, you know, seriously about how they think.
You're coming to people that are not interested in what you're bringing them. That's the problem. You need to bring them something that awakens them, that attracts them, and that they're willing to open their eyes and their ears and to see that there's something. Who are you? What are you? And what are you giving them? You have to somewhat attract them towards you. What if you start your wisecracks, and that's not going to work? You need to work with the lack that a person has. Before you come to a person, you need to know what his lack is. Otherwise, what connection will you have with him?
Yeah, but their nature is like the nations of the world.
His nature is the desire to enjoy, the desire to fill himself. Well,
so he wants to live like the nations of the world are living, like everyone else.
Well, and what's the problem with that, right? That's how the Creator arranged it for him. What's next?
So who am I turning to, then? Who am I addressing?
You're addressing his will to receive, and to, in order to explain to him, to his will to receive, that you have filling for him.
So, what is it for the person?
If you don't know, don't go out. You're just spoiling that work for us. That's it. Wash the floors here in our hall, and that's it. And let people who understand go out. What do you mean? When I go to contact a person, I need to first know what he wants. And to show him, look, listen, I have something that's specially for you. In such a way you come to people. And if he doesn't hear, the one next to him may hear, and through them you go influence. That's the initial contact. How could you otherwise do it? I don't understand. When I stand on the stage and start to explain to them the matter of Tzimtzum and Ein Sof and blah, blah, blah. Only his desire, which is now there. Yes.
From what Bala Sulam writes here, it's clear why people are against unity, because they want to get what they want to get, but they don't want someone to give it to them. They want to get it by themselves. This is what looks from here.
I don't think so. I think a person wants filling with zero effort. If he can get it in zero effort, he'll be happy. That's it. That's what he wants. And not that from someone, from something. Of course, the best is if I'm receiving it on my own. Why? Because then it doesn't obligate me. It doesn't spoil for me the... But all in all, I want filling. Yes.
A student asks, when someone shows grace, it evokes shame in us. How could it be?
He's talking about the law and how it's rooted in a person. But the question is how a person is receiving. You may have brought me, you put here on the table everything that I want. If I don't what you brought me, then you didn't even give me anything, and I didn't receive. If you filled here the whole table with all kinds of things and gifts that I really wanted, so now the question is, do I receive it or not? Do I nullify you or not? Are you bringing me shame with it together or not? Well,
It's like the other, you know, made a good deed. Why should there be shame?
He's not doing a good deed. If he brought, it's not just that he's giving. Someone that's giving doesn't mean he's giving. He could be wanting to do by doing so be higher above me, rise above me, or by doing that to show others how good he is, that he's doing such deeds. The action of giving itself doesn't mean anything. If he invites in me by doing so shame, then it completely doesn't belong to giving. It's not giving at all. Maybe he's giving me in order to be above me. Is that considered that he's giving? When I'm receiving to him from him, I need to do a calculation. How much will it cost me in the end that I received from him? No, it's not simple. You are talking about giving and reception in a mechanical manner. We need to do the calculation in inner reception and giving, which includes all sorts of data, of conditions, relationships between people and with the environment. what, just some object that's going to be passed from one person to another? That's considered giving? No, it's we're human beings. Who's giving me? Why is he giving? For what? How will I receive it? How will I feel it? Someone that are close to me, are hate my haters, different people, how they look at it. I have to do a very big scrutiny about this. And all in all, there is no such thing that an egoist, a person who's an egoist, is giving another. It's not possible. The fact that he mechanically passes some object from him to you, that's not considered that he's giving. He's not capable of giving. A simple egoistic desire is not capable of giving, but for him, that giving, that mechanical giving, is actually a matter of reception, a reception of pleasure from you, from others, it doesn't matter. Yes?
So, Avram Levy is asking from Tzipori.
Well.
What do we want to give to others or the public? How do we do this?
We, when we go out to them, we go out to them because we want to advance to the purpose of creation. We don't have a choice. We have to do that. We're doing it in order to bestow. And what in order to bestow do we have? We hear what the Kabbalists tell us to do, and that's what we're doing. I myself, would I go out myself and go and disseminate? Unless it's under the condition that it will bring me honor, control, or something, then yes, we have people that do that. But we do it out of the essence of attaining the goal, which is important to us. Why is it important to us? Not because I give importance to spirituality, but because the Creator awakens in me that desire. If that desire in me, if I don't hold on to it in practice, then immediately I stop wanting to spirituality and I'll go home to lay down. That's it. It's simple. And that's why I don't have any... We need to understand that only our ego pushes us. It's a help against us. Well, let's continue, please.
We'll continue. We're in item 9. Thus, we love to rest and we hate to move so much that we do not make a single movement if not for the attainment of rest. That is because our root is immobile, but at rest, and no motion exists in him whatsoever. Therefore, it is against our nature and loathsome to us. By the same token, we love wisdom, strength, and wealth, etc., because all those exist in him who is our root. Hence, we hate their opposites, such as foolishness, weakness, and poverty, since they do not exist in our root at all. This makes us feel hateful and loathsome, and pains us immeasurably.
Questions? Yes?
I see that I make a lot of movements in life and it doesn't bring me rest, but more mess.
Because you just want to fill yourself more and more and more? So there's no choice. You have a desire to attain something that is more than the desire to rest. And that's why you jump from the rest, from that couch, let's say, and you run to attain, to achieve something, to get something. Because then sitting in the group will be considered as success in comparison to a great loss. But if not for the sensation of the profit, then you always search and in your actions, subconsciously, you calculate everything and what way to invest at least as possible. the least efforts as possible.
Still, I see all the movements I make don't bring me rest. They just make me make more moves.
You don't have a choice. You're given a desire that you have to carry out. But the nature is such, if not for not for those desires that the Creator awakens you, you would be drawn only to rest always. And now the question comes, is running after pleasures also considered rest? Yes. Also yes. Is sitting on the couch or laying reclining on the recliner considered rest? No. It could be that I really want something and I'm really aspiring for something and I really have to do it and I'm not capable. So for me, that state where my body is in rest is not a state where my soul's in rest. I am then in great turmoil. Let's say I broke my leg and I have to do many things and I can't. So for me, it would be great suffering. Meaning, the rest is according to what a person defines, that is comfortable for me, which is good for me, where I have a certain coolness about, and that's considered rest. We always say rest for forever and ever in the end of correction. Endless couplings in the greatest frequency. Everyone is in like, I don't even know how to depict this, how to imagine this. But that's rest. How could it be? Because that's desirable. Yes.
So the desired state is basically rest. It doesn't matter how it happens externally.
If I'm in a state that is desirable to me, I'm in rest. That's rest. I love to run. So if I'm running, I'm in rest, a state of rest. Rest is considered that my desire, which now talks in me, is in what it wants to be. And not just some physical action, but rather according to my desire. Rest is considered that I am dealing with what I want. Yes.
But the physical action is not a result of my desire?
Yes. If so, then I'm in rest. If so, it could be a physical action that I didn't reach what I wanted to get to. But if I'm enjoying the action, it's considered that I am in rest. I gave an example, and I heard this from Rabash in some place. What's the difference between walking and a stroll? In a stroll, you enjoy every moment. In walking, there in the end, maybe it's done, but it's there in the end, but you have to get there. When I'm strolling, I don't owe anyone. So the question is, who's kind of going for a journey and who's walking? You can't tell on a person, but it's all according to his will to receive. If I'm receiving what I want, it's rest. It could be very hard work. People, what do? You see, they're climbing Mount Everest. And what hard work that is. In him, it's considered rest. Okay. Other questions? Yes, Moshe?
This whole matter of bestowal, there are a couple hundred people in front of me that I meet daily. If I love them, I bestow upon them and I enjoy. Yeah, that's the whole thing? Just to reach that kind of state?
No. If you enjoy from bestowing to people? Somewhat you're correct, but what's missing here is the work of the scrutiny. Why I'm doing this, for what goal, for what purpose, what's happening here? Am I attaining through this the root of creation? If a person just like that wants to influence to others, well, he's an altruist. There are such people. And just like Baruch Salam writes to us, there's like about 10% of the humanity, all in all, that have that inclination. They kind of like enjoy from influencing others. That sometimes awakens in each person, each and every person, but it could be that there are certain kinds of people that are that enjoy from that. As a copy from the root to the branch.
Opportunities to bestow, there's more than to receive. So,
yes.
So even in our world, so that's not the bestowal of the kind we're talking about. So what is?
You want to know what true bestowal is? True bestowal is not from the point of the ego, which is pushing me, my nature, but rather according to the importance of the goal, which is opposite the ego. So that this bestowal will be for the sake of bestowal, so we'll truly call your action bestowal, and not that you, because you enjoy from that action, then you bestow. Because all in all, you're receiving.
But it's, so it's no longer just a walk, you know, a trip. So is it a walk? Is it, what is it regarding the analogy?
If I'm bestowing to others and I'm doing it from my ego, and my bestowal towards others, I'm in rest because I'm working according to my ego, according to my desire. If I'm bestowing to others because I'm obligated to do so, that's considered work. That's not a spiritual effort. If I want to come to bestowal to others because I want to rise above my ego and to be similar to the Creator, that is spiritual bestowal.
And is it something we should explain? Or
explain it to who? No, we don't explain anything. We just let people connect, unite, and come to a state in which they feel good. We don't, and from these things, we don't explain anything to anyone. They'll just get confused. We too are confused about it.
So the whole explanation ends up in being altruist, you know, just a simple bestow to others, be at rest, you'll be better off.
No, we're saying that by connecting and being in a circle, we awaken from the center of the circle this force which is immersed in nature, which is called the force of good, bestowal, love, connection. And this good force, if it is disclosed, revealed in our world together with the bad force, which is our ego, we can come to a balance, that a force that balances these two forces, and from that we can come to a world where we correct everything. What is that world? It's the relationships between people. Yes.
כתוב כאן שהאור נמצא, שהאור נמצא במנוחה מוחלטת.
כן.
שהוא אין בו תנועה.
It says here that the light is in complete rest, that it's immobile. And you said that before that in a final correction, every moment there are thousands of couplings. So how is their equivalence of form?
How do I enjoy in the end of correction if there's no one to enjoy it with? I am in endless adherence with the Creator, complete. I have nothing to give Him. We, me and Him become as one. If I don't bestow, I'm in a greater problem. Like a cow that wants to give milk and there's no one to milk it. So we need to understand that the force of correction is considered the ability to enjoy endless, unlimited from giving, because in reception you are always limited. A person, there's no such thing as a person dying without remaining half of his desire inside of him. This vessel of reception is limited, and that's why it says that in the end of correction, there's no limit to the ability to bestow.
What is adhesion with something that has no movement, something that is at complete rest, immobile?
Absolute rest is not that I'm in movement or not in movement. It means that I'm running, that I'm in movement. But for me, it's a pleasure.
No, I'm asking with regards to the Creator. Adhesion with respect to something that is at complete rest, without motion.
There's no such thing that he's in absolute rest like you're saying. The Creator is in endless movement and never stopping.
So just understand, but Baal Shalom writes here, immobile.
So understand what it means for him, absolute rest, that he can, he has the ability to do it. Baal Shalom gives an example, the Queen of England who just had a daughter. She comes and she wants to feed this daughter. You have 20 servants, yes? Let them do it. No, I myself want to do so, to feed this baby food. Why? Pleasure. So is it work or is it pleasure? Work. No, it's not work. For the servant, it's work. For the mother, it's a pleasure. It's a delight.
Sorry. Is the light at complete rest or not? I just don't get it.
The light is in absolute rest, but it is endless speed and it's in every place. Now you should understand, what is in endless speed and is in every place? It can be in every place, possibly like we're discovering in quantum physics. It is in every place at once, and with that, it is doing individualistic actions in endless speed.
And can you cling and adhere to such a thing?
Of course, otherwise you don't come to rest, which is the agreement to be in that that unlimited speed. But it's worthwhile to think about this. Do you have maybe something about that?
We may have something. This is from Baal HaSulam, from the Fruit of the Sage, from an article, The One Who is Sorrow with the Shares the Sorrow of the Public. He writes, "The righteous ones have no rest, which means that they always delve into deepening their receptacle, because the bestower has no measurement, only the receiver. So all their direction in life is to strengthen and yearn and make the receptacle in order to expand the holiness."
Well, maybe we'll find more, but definitely it's because we rise from degree to degree, our frequency and pace grows and grows, and we define rest each time in a different fashion, in a different manner. Rest is considered that it's good for me with my actions, with my desire, which through it I serve others. Try and limit a person who's trying to bestow to others by him not bestowing. For him, it would be sorrow. It would be, it's not, tell someone that wants to bestow to others, sit, okay, quietly, rest. He's exploding, he wants. Understand that it's all coming from desire. The thing is that you are in equivalence of form with your desire. Whereas what's in your desire is what you're executing. If you can bestow to others and you have possibilities to bestow to others, and these possibilities are endless, and your world is also unlimited, and it's already with the Masach and the Tzimtzum and everything and the reflecting light, then you're in rest, which is considered Ein Sof, infinity. The light fills all the vessels. And then it is considered the rest of the worlds. And what is that rest? In endless activities, endless activities, and always each of them has an ability to bestow to each and everyone and at once. How do you come to that endless speed? Because you're already in the spiritual degrees, and there the speed is infinite. It's not like in quantum physics we're discovering also that there's no matter of place or of time, but rather a lot more than that. Yes.
Meaning my system of scrutiny also needs to reach these speeds and rates.
Of course. All of this is inside of you, and you discover it all inside of you. Other than that, nothing else. You discover that we are all in you, and all of this one desire is in a state of an infinite state. Well,
about this, maybe what you say explains, well, you know, we know that the desire is influenced by the environment, from what we hear, and now when you talk to people and tell them...
Okay, when did you finish?
No, so when you talk to people, they say, we're happy, you know, we work 12 hours a day, we drive 2 hours to work and back, and we're very, very happy at work. We have no problem, everything's good in life. That's also why you see that 85% of the Israelis, when you ask them, they say, we're happy. So... how can you address them now and say, listen, there's a problem, or try to move them to some place where they start thinking that maybe they're not happy?
I don't tell them anything. I don't understand how you get to these. How can you even allow yourself to open your mouth if you're like that? You're Shapira number two, or...?
Maybe I asked it incorrectly. How do you cause them to want something else that...
No, I don't cost them anything. For what do I have to do
then? Then what do you offer them?
You ask, what does Rabash recommend to do this? What does he say? What can you do? High spirits.
No, they have really high spirits. They have a great mood.
No, always you can add to the mood of a person.
They're in equivalence of form with themselves. No, guys, seriously, it may sound funny, but it really isn't. You come to people, they tell you we're good.
I truly am shocked in how much you, with a lack of the right instruments, you're coming to
people.
I'll
try to speak in your language.
I'm telling you simply, a mood is something that is limited. You can always add to that.
I agree, but he'll tell you, listen, the effort
talk to him
that
about
I need
that.
To make in order to sit with you and raise my spirits, I'm better off sitting another hour at work, and it gives me a great mood.
I'm not going to ruin that for you, please.
So I have no time to sit with you.
No, sit, but if you want to feel now, within 20 minutes, 30 minutes... how you can always raise your spirits, your mood, always you're feeling good, a nice attitude with others, the calm. Come here and I'll show you how to do this.
So you basically want to take them out of their comfort zone, their comfort?
No, on the contrary, I need to bring him to rest and a rest for all life, where he'll feel his whole life like that.
But they feel at rest, they're happy. They're happy with what they're doing.
Again, I'm saying there's no such thing like that in the world that a person can learn. There's no, unless he's an animal. You can't come to a person and say, look, I will show you now how much you can be balanced and in rest, in happiness, in a good mood, in such an attitude that you will get along with everyone. This is missing to each and everyone. It can't be that you're... maybe he's crazy and he's just smiling all the time, but...
Yeah, but he finds what you're talking about in going to a pub with friends, getting a raise in salary. He doesn't want what you're offering.
Okay, wait. Okay, so he goes to pubs and he goes to all those things. He goes in order to get a good mood. And I'm recommending for him to taste in another opportunity in which in a quarter of an hour or half an hour, he will come to a good mood.
Excellent, excellent. And then he compares and he says, you know, I sat with your circle and I went to a pub. The pub is better.
Please? Sorry, I stole half an hour of your life. I was trying to give you a trick, a pattern of how to do something. It didn't work.
This is the root of our difficulty with these people. Because
why?
They feel that these 20 minutes, you know, could have been better spent on watching TV.
If they will sit, I don't know what you're, these things, but if they will sit and come to a state in which they have now joy, warmth, a feeling which is such that they have ascended from the previous state that there was between them, truly a lack of understanding of who they are and what they are and what's happening here. And now they feel that they are all together. You're giving them a way to make their better family, how to connect the children to their parents, how to make from the work of the group such that it could be together, all of it. And how to make between states and between his nation that he is so destroyed and crushed, and how to make it between the countries. You're selling him a global, international trick. What are you telling him? That he's going to enjoy? You simply don't know how to explain this in a few words. But after he felt it in a circle, there must be there the last question in which, how can we, with that principle that we just learned, how can we attain a good life in each and every state, in family, with the children, at school, in the university, between husband and wife, at work, in the state, to connect everyone together. Look at what's happening. What do you want to tell us? What are you trying to make crazy people out of us, stupid, that everything's okay? Nothing is okay. That he's driving for 10 hours and he's for 12 hours busy? That's enjoying? He doesn't know if he's enjoying or not. I don't know. I don't have the words, but it's nonsense. You truly don't know how to sell a trick that has such certain, such good, that Kabbalists are telling us that by doing so, you're starting to use the upper force.
You're saying we're capable, but not at once. If people come to us and again, and
it's a sign that you're not doing the workshop in the right way. Within a half an hour, you can bring him to a knowledge that through such a seeding, he can come to the force of good. And if in that, let's say he will do it at home or in such way, some way at work, if we were to do this, not him doing it, if we were to do this, we would all get along. And the country would be different, and the family would be different, and the children would be different, and everything. All that's lacking is for us, to learn how to do this. That's it.
It connects to the first part that Igal mentioned, that we have no choice. We have to learn this as acting. We have to go into this phase of, you know, how to meet a person we never met before, and because we know what we feel here. But if we communicate just a little fragment of this through a game, then they'll sit and then they'll feel it, and it will move forward, and it'll pass on to them. It'll work.
You need to know how to sell these things. You may have to write something there that is attractive. I don't know, a miracle, or a world patent, some upper force, I don't know, something that will fill all your desires, all your wishes, yeah, for free. Okay, guys, you need to work on this. I'm certain that you will succeed, but each of you has to be concerned whether and make sure that he can truly be the person that is caring for the public. And we must all do this. There's no choice. And what are we ending with?
We'll end with a song.
קוצים גדול קורא אני בקול תפילת הלב אל המרום עד ינוסו הצללים מבין הערפילים עם שחר הקיץ מהחלום את החי מבקש אני הם חיי הם נשמתי בלעדם אני לא קיים את החי מבקש הם נשמעתי בלעדם אני לא קיים עמוק בתוך הלב את החי סוחב ובתוכי בוער גלי עבר עבדו עקבות אבל רוחות טובות יובילו אל ים האהב